today is no exception to that. And we got a little special something coming up from Nicole Henry. So let's, how about we get the party started?
That sounds awesome.
Let's do it. Let's bring Nicole in from Miami. And Robert, thank you again. I will see you on the other side of what divine message is coming through you today.
Sounds good.
Thanks. Here's Nicole.
This is a song from the dear Whitney Houston, and I actually have a new show. It's the Songs of Whitney Houston, and it's called I Want to Dance with Somebody. So I thought it was appropriate. And as we celebrate love in all its forms, love in all its freedoms, and love for ourselves, particularly as we're taking care of each other and ourselves. Not stressed upon the hour, and the sun begins to fade. Still enough time to figure out how to chase my blues away. I've done all right up till now. It's the light of day that shows me how. And when night falls, my lonely heart calls. I wanna dance with somebody. I wanna feel the heat with somebody. Somebody who loves me. I wanna dance with somebody. I wanna feel the heat with somebody. Yeah, I wanna dance with somebody. With somebody who loves me. Spinning through the town. Sooner or later, the feeling ends, and I wind up feeling down. I need a man who'll take the chance on a love that burns hot enough to last. So when the night falls, my lonely heart calls.
Thank you, Nicole. And I hope you want to dance now, because I sure do. Where else than Unity of New York would you hear that in a Sunday service? Amazing. Amazing. Well, today's talk, brings together a number of my passions. The title is a riff on an Irving Berlin song called Let's Face the Music and Dance. Faith, the music, and dance are, for me, interrelated. And I want to explore that relationship today with an emphasis on dance and on music that makes our bodies move. Now, as many of you know, I've been involved in musical theater, both as writer and performer, and its relationship to spirituality intrigues me. I also, you may not know, I also trained as a mime in college. So I became adept at using my body to express emotions and stories through that. It was in college, a long time ago. Everybody has a phase they go through where they do mime, right? After college, I went through a bit of depression. Then I came out of the closet, did some therapy, had a relationship, ended a relationship, yada, yada, yada. By my late 30s, I was involved in spirituality. And there was an exuberance in me that wanted a distinctly spiritual expression. And I found that here in Unity. Now, this month is Gay Pride, celebrating a journey and a free expression that is connected to this theme as well, in my opinion and experience. More on that later. Juneteenth is also coming up, and it's a celebration for African Americans of liberation and a literal ownership of their own bodies at the most fundamental level. And Father's Day, I think, invites us to look at what it means to be a man today. And that's part of this topic too. So, with all of that said, let us jump in. The history of dance and Christianity is an interesting, but sadly, all too often antagonistic one. The earliest Christians reacted to the pagan practices around them in the Roman Empire and saw great abuse and carelessness with the lives of other people. So they set themselves up in opposition. According to church leaders and early theologians such as Tertullian and St. Augustine, dance incited idolatry, lust, and damnation. Medieval church councils railed against dancing, specifically censuring immoral, effeminate, and mixed dancing. Violators could be excommunicated. One author at the time, in medieval times, wrote, "As many paces as a man maketh in dance, so many paces doth he make to hell." Fun, right? Men of that time saw dancing as one of the evils of women, pointing to Salome's dance as proof. She tempted Herod with her erotic dancing, and John the Baptist died as a result. It's a whole story. But the moral was, you see, she did that with her wicked dancing. And then they added that to the story of Eve to prove that all things feminine are suspect at best and often mortally sinful and dangerous to the soul. Now, a certain form of courtly dance flourished during the Renaissance with intricate moves like the ones you might see on Bridgerton, so that one needed to hire an instructor and have time to practice in order to master them. Now, this meant, in other words, that their dancing was refined and not at all vulgar like the lower classes. And this attitude survives somewhat to this day, with respect going to classic forms like ballet and eventually modern dance, while so-called street dancing is not to be taken seriously. Now, we might ask, why is dance so often banned or restricted or judged harshly, as it was in our popular culture when I was growing up, especially for men? It has often been associated with losing control of one's body and of a wild nature not compatible with good Christian behavior. We should also admit, I think, that sexism, classism, and racism have played a major role in the judgment of and restriction of music and dance. We are serious and pious, some people seem to say, unlike them, whether it was people of color, women, or gay men, or any other group that people wanted to control or negate. But here's a question for you. Was Jesus serious and pious? Well, Richard Rohr points out that Jesus' first miracle was turning water into wine in order to extend a wedding feast, a huge party with dancing and, thanks to him, lots of wine. And yet, Rohr says, quote, "Much of later Christianity has been rather prudish and ashamed of the human body, which God took on so happily through Jesus and then gave away to us so freely in the Eucharist." I love his perspective on things. In other words, our incarnation is to be celebrated, not denied or escaped. But I think because of this history I'm discussing, we've cut ourselves off from our inner lives, those scary impulses and feelings, the passions and the tenderness, the intuition and guidance, the still, small voice. We say seeing is believing because we trust only that which can be seen externally. Men especially are trained not to feel, and we're taught to mock things that are not grounded in fact and substance as nonsense, something outside the five senses that we acknowledge: hearing, seeing, touching, smelling, tasting, period. Anything else doesn't matter. It doesn't count. We cannot measure it. So where is inner feeling? Where is that sense? Emotions, spirituality, love? Our Puritan ancestors feared sexuality and dancing and anything that got us in touch with our inner lives. Misogyny flourished. Women burned as witches. And misogyny is one of the key factors in homophobia, this rigid notion of who we must and must not be. Male good, female bad. Be a man like this, be a woman like that, or else. It's a very rigid binary. So rigid that straying from it as a gay man, lesbian, or member of the trans community elicits rage and even violence. I mean, people get really, like, freaked out by this stuff. It's amazing. Now, perhaps you have asked yourself, or you're asking right now, why are so many gay men, especially, known for dancing? Good question. Well, I think it's because we're in touch with what's going on inside of us, and we've allowed it to move us into a truthful expression, one in alignment with that most sacred inner feeling called love. We're in touch, more than most men allow themselves to be, with our inner feelings, something written off as feminine. We allow ourselves to dance, to be artists, to vary the tone in our voices because we are connected to something inside. We listen to that and follow it in and with our bodies. And all of that has far too often been completely outside the realm of Christian expression, especially among the so-called WASPs. Bishop Spong used to joke that if the Jews were the chosen people, his congregants were the frozen people. Now, Black African-American churches have in many cases been more comfortable with movement and with passionate singing, and some of the Pentecostal and other churches have as well. But sexism, racism, and homophobia have all contributed in our history to a rejection of dance and passionate music as unholy and beneath us in the dominant popular narrative. And not just in church circles. I remember growing up with cartoons and comedies that mocked African tribal dancing and Native American dancing. Such dancing was dismissed as primitive. But the only primitive thing was the judgment itself, the racist denigration that was so common, it appeared in Saturday morning cartoons for children. I also remember the strong backlash to disco music in the late 70s and early 80s. It was not just a dislike, it was a passionate hatred of a popular style of music. Back when this kind of public expression was quite rare, people wore t-shirts that proclaimed "disco sucks," which was shocking to see at the time. I think I sensed even then that a deep discomfort with gay men who had become associated with the music lay behind the revulsion. And of course, people of color were also associated with this music. So there's often been this mocking or even disgust toward dance and bodily expression in our popular culture, and even more so in our church life. Shame and fear tell us to disown parts of ourselves, that our very bodies are sinful. A place of spirit should never become a place of fear. And yet, far too often, for many, this is what it has become, causing them to reject any organized religion. I understand why so many of my gay contemporaries refuse to go anywhere near a church. Millennia of persecution will do that. And that's why places like Unity are so vital and so healing. We can have spirit as our full selves. Yes. As we bring our bodies back into our spiritual expression, as we allow more passion in the music we use in church, as we do here, we begin to have a different experience in church, one that celebrates us in all our vibrant beauty. This expands the appeal of church, inviting more of us in and inviting more aspects of each one of us into the space. Such a body positive, music and movement positive take on our spiritual selves finds expression not only in Jesus's first miracle, but throughout the Bible. The Psalms, after all, were songs, and there is even joyful, spirit-infused dancing. For example, in the second book of Samuel, chapter 6, King David, who you remember earlier, took down Goliath dressed not in rigid armor, but only in his loincloth, or, according to Michelangelo, even less. He was vulnerable, naked or near naked, and yet surprisingly powerful. This same David has occasion in 2 Samuel chapter 6 to celebrate, and so he dances, once again, scantily dressed. Now listen to 2 Samuel 6, verses 20 to 23, as translated with more modern language in the Message. David returned home to bless his family. Michal, Saul's daughter, came out to greet him. "How wonderfully the king has distinguished himself today, exposing himself to the eyes of the servants' maids like some burlesque street dancer." David replied to Michal, "In God's presence, I'll dance all I want. He chose me over your father and the rest of the family and made me prince over God's people, over Israel. Oh, yes, I'll dance to God's glory, more recklessly even than this. And as far as I'm concerned, I'll gladly look like a fool. But among these maids you're so worried about, I'll be honored no end." Michal, Saul's daughter, was barren the rest of her life. Okay, now to the modern ear, that last bit may sound a bit harsh. But let's look at it metaphysically. I think it's saying that such rejection and judgment cut us off from God. Such rigidity leaves us barren. The Jewish people, and by extension Christians, descend therefore, not from the house of Saul, since Saul's daughter was barren, but rather from the house of David, this occasionally ecstatic, nearly naked dancer. The repression of dance, of movement, of our inner lives cuts us off from a truly profound relationship with the divine and again leaves us barren. I may have shared this personal story before, but it bears repeating in this context. About 9 years ago, I went on a spiritual retreat with other gay men up near Albany. Toward the end of this spiritually centered week, I participated in an exercise of both trust and liberation, moving and dancing in a room with everyone else, blindfolded. At the end of the exercise, we remained quiet as we were led to join hands and sit, and then remove our blindfolds. Silently, everyone left, and I went outside on the porch in the middle of the woods. And I knew, on a visceral level, my oneness. It is truly impossible to capture in words, but I knew it in and as and beyond my body. It was profound. And I stayed in that state for some time, and there were echoes of it for quite a while. And that retreat changed me, bringing home the sacred within me, within my incarnated self, not in spite of, but in conjunction with being gay. It's a flavor in me that has been an essential element in knowing the God experience. That dance changed my life. I signed up for seminary shortly after that retreat, and before starting my formal training, went out to dinner with a group of gay men that I had never met. One of whom asked the whole table, "So what are your spiritual lives like?" Well, the answer I gave apparently won the day, because the guy who asked the question is now my fiance. Last summer in Paris, in a beautiful park on the Seine, next to the Pont Neuf, nous nous sommes fiancés, as the French so wonderfully put it. Dancing has always been an essential part of me at a primal, joyful, and spiritual level. Every time someone has asked me to list 10 joyful activities on a retreat or class or chaplain training, dancing has always been number one or two. As Rumi put it so perfectly back in the 1200s, dancing is not just getting up painlessly like a leaf blown on the wind. Dancing is when you tear your heart out and rise out of your body to hang suspended between the worlds. He also said, "Whosoever knoweth the power of the dance dwelleth in God." Compare that to that other medieval guy we heard earlier, dance bringing us closer to hell. I think I prefer Rumi. According to Wikipedia, Rumi believed passionately in the use of music, poetry, and dance as a path for reaching God. For Rumi, music helped devotees to focus their whole being on the divine and to do this so intensely that the soul was both destroyed and resurrected. It was from these ideas that the practice of whirling dervishes developed into a ritual form. 100 years later, another Sufi poet emerged, one who memorized not only the Quran, but also, they say, the complete works of Rumi. This poet, therefore, was given the nickname Hafez, which means one who remembers. I'd like to close today with a poem by Hafez, written sometime in the mid-1300s. It beautifully expresses and lifts up the message I'd love for you to take today. Here is that poem. I know the voice of depression still calls to you. I know those habits that can ruin your life still send their invitations. But you are with the friend now and look so much stronger. You can stay that way and even bloom. Keep squeezing drops of the sun from your prayers and work and music and from your companion's beautiful laughter. Keep squeezing drops of the sun from the sacred hands and glance of your beloved and my dear, from the most insignificant movements of your own holy body. Learn to recognize the counterfeit coins that may buy you just a moment of pleasure, but then drag you for days like a broken man behind a smelly camel. You are with the friend now. Learn what actions of yours delight him, what actions of yours bring freedom and love. Whenever you say God's name, dear pilgrim, my ears wish my head was missing so they could finally kiss each other and applaud all your nourishing wisdom. Oh, keep squeezing drops of the sun from your prayers and work and music and from your companion's beautiful laughter and from the most insignificant movements of your own holy body. Now, sweet one, be wise. Cast all your votes for dancing.
Breathe in deeply, connecting with the joy at your core. I encourage you to open your eyes and stand if you're able, because it's time to celebrate your incarnation now. And move. Shake your hands. Send them some love. Shake them up. Shake them down. Shake them any way you choose, feeling gratitude for everything they do for you every day. Get your arms in there too. Try going up and down or side to side, or however you're moved to move them. Keep squeezing drops of the sun from the most insignificant movements of your own holy body. If you haven't added them yet, get your feet and legs moving, side to side, or tap your feet if you're still sitting. You can move your knees left and right. It is up to you. Move. Feel gratitude for each part of your body, moving in celebration of this incarnation we call life. Dance like no one is watching, because that's the truth. So practice moving however you want to, expressing your joy or your sorrow or whatever you are feeling right now. Move one part or many. Move up and down or left and right. Kick on the beat or stomp your feet. And now, if there is some part of you that you don't normally love as much, focus on that part and send it love, and if you can, move it in celebration of its beauty. Practice sending it love anyway, like Jesus told us. Make friends with all of you. You're the only you you have. and you are a wonder. And now, without any guidance from me, just for a few moments, move however you choose and think to yourself or say out loud, yes, yes, yes. Begin to slow the movements down, focusing on just one part again. Feel the energy in you. In your mind or out loud, say thank you hands, thank you legs, thank you life. God is here with you always, loving you always, and so you are in fact dancing with someone who loves you. And so it is. Amen.
Love yourself. If you just believe, you're